B-Pod Studios.
Who is Milo's favorite player?
Free Rollins.
Boston sports fans start their day with Tucker and Rich.
Oh, man, too much.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Tom Brady made a career getting rid of the ball inside of 2 seconds, if I remember correctly, Dan Orlovsky. You can educate me on that, but he's known for getting rid of the ball relatively quickly. Last time I checked, Josh McDaniel, his offensive coordinator, is still in New England. Bill Belichick is still in New England. And if they could get Tom Brady to get rid of the ball relatively quickly, they can certainly get Tua to do that as well. That combined with his ability to throw the football with accuracy, fresh off of completing 71% of his passes as a star quarterback at Alabama this past season, I think that you could ultimately do some things. I'm not saying it's going to happen. Please don't get me wrong, because if I'm a team, I wouldn't give up the opportunity to get him. If I was, you know, anywhere from three on down in the draft, I would not give up the opportunity to grab Tua if I needed a quarterback. But in the event that a team is fortunate enough to be able to pull this off, I'm thinking about the system the New England Patriots have, the coaching, Bill Belichick, his close relationship with Nick Saban.
Five of Sports Hub, it is Toucher and Rich, and on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline, we have a gentleman who is a senior writer for senior NFL writer for CBSSports.com. He also hosts the daily Pick Six podcast, and he's also a man of great controversy. Last night, he might have tweeted out his most controversial opinion. Mr. Will Brinson, you tweeted, Better Call Saul is better than Breaking Bad. It's okay. It is.
No, it's not.
How could that possibly... Listen, I am a huge Better Call Saul fan. Right now, in my opinion, it might be the best show on TV. Breaking Bad is the best show in the history of television. Okay. Explain yourself.
So here it is. First of all, Better Call Saul, incredible television. Breaking Bad, I agree, one of the greatest television shows of all time. But
The greatest.
I would actually agree that it's the greatest show of all time. But here's the difference between the two shows. The level of difficulty at which Better Call Saul is operating at versus Breaking Bad is like we're talking about, it's all Madden versus rookie level. Because, one, Better Call Saul is operating in a world post-Breaking Bad where we have, and post-Sopranos, where you have this, you know, the villain is the protagonist. It is very commonplace to have a bad, quote-unquote, bad protagonist now. You have to rise above a much bigger field. The field's much more saturated. Two, it is a show that is following in the footsteps of Breaking Bad. It's a spinoff, and it is managing to operate at the same level as Breaking Bad. And then three, most importantly, these guys are writing to a predetermined ending that we already know and are still managing to fill it with more drama than you could possibly expect. And they're doing it without the assistance of a bunch of meth.
there's plenty of meth. I mean, we're getting there, but okay, I'll give you this much. I didn't expect to care as much about the characters, seeing that I already know like which ones live. Like, not which ones die, but which ones will stay alive because they end up at Breaking Bad. That is a feat amongst in itself to be able to do that. Breaking Bad, I mean, as I said, Better Call Saul is phenomenal. It's great. It's as I said, one of the best shows on TV. But Breaking Bad, because you had no idea how it was going to end, you knew that at any given time, any of those guys could die. So as far as just pure entertainment standards and shock value, I got to give it to Breaking Bad. Controversial opinion, though, coming right out of the box and saying that.
But exactly, that's my point. Like, as far as entertainment and pure shock value, Breaking Bad will win. But that's why Better Call Saul is actually a better show. Like, I think Better Call Saul is what happened when, like, Vince Gilligan has the freedom to really explore. Like, he's already produced a hit record, right? Like, he's already a made man. He made his, you know, he had his album that you know, was a number one in the world, et cetera, et cetera. And so he's been given way more freedom with this show from the get-go. And I think, like, Bob Odenkirk is low-key one of the best actors in America and just doesn't get the respect for it. Probably because he started out as a, you know, on Mr. Show and then migrated to, you know, being a goofy lawyer in a show that was headlined by Bryan Cranston.
Admit it, the first two seasons dragged a little bit. They didn't need an entire several seasons to deal with his brother. They didn't. Michael McKean, they spent way too much time with him. And then we'll shut up about Better Call Saul.
I mean, they were not – the problem with the early seasons, it was like there wasn't any meth.
Right. Once the meth shows up and the danger shows up, it takes off. I need meth.
Yeah.
Somebody save that.
That's the beauty of Breaking Bad, too. It's like the entire premise is based around, like, you know, illicit drugs. Like, that elevates the stakes substantially versus, you know, two lawyer brothers fighting it out over, you know, who insulted who, et cetera.
Of course. All right. Well, I like your controversial fan. I like you're not afraid to shake things up there on the old Twitter machine. Had some arguments with people last night. I don't agree with you, but there you go. That's why you get paid the big bucks.
I may have been drinking.
You may have been drinking, of course. Why not? And by the way, don't tell me a damn thing about last night. I still have yet to see yesterday's episode, and it's been phenomenal up to this point this season. It's been really, really good. All right, so this is going to be a very weird draft. We now kind of have the specifics of how it's going to be. Did you? We were talking about this. They're doing something fairly smart, believe it or not, with this draft, and that is, even though there's going to be some reporters and there's going to be obviously personnel from the teams that are going to be broadcasting on their computers from their homes, they're going to have somebody in a studio, like for the ABC and the ESPN one, who kind of, you know, is the air traffic controller for everything. Unlike the horse competition the other night, where the guy with the worst connection was the host. It ended up being a cluster F of the highest degree. I keep saying it's like the entire show looks like it was broadcast on Netscape Navigator. And it looks like this time, like, there's going to be at least a little bit of polish that makes it palatable. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think we'll end up with a pretty good product. And I believe it was sort of hard to understand, to parse through the full press release, but I think that ESPN and /ABC and NFL Network are sort of joining forces on it.
For the first three rounds, it's the same broadcast on all three networks, I think.
Yeah, and they're just going to work together to get it out there. And then I guess in the final round, like, Rich Eisen will split off. And I like that idea. I think it sounds to me as if I would assume that it was born out of the premise that Rich Eisen can't get to the studio, because I think he's going to be from his home, whereas Trey Wingo and the ESPN guys are going to be at a studio in Bristol.
Yeah.
And the ability to broadcast from the studio is a enormous difference when you're putting it out there on ABC and NFL Network. And so,
oh, God, no question. And the horse competition proved just how valuable it is. You have to have at least one person with decent quality dictating who goes where, or it is an absolute cluster F.
Yeah, like if you have a guy in a studio who's running point and passing it off to, like, analysts who are at home, like, that's what we do in our CBS Sports mock draft. That we do a mock, and ours, ours yesterday was an absolute disaster. I was grading all 32 teams, but all 32 picks, but it was like we had Chris Hassel in studio, and he would be like, all right, we'll throw it to here, here, and here. And if you have one guy running point from a studio with a producer in their ear, you're going to be fine in terms of, like, getting something that's manageable out there and not having that horse debacle unfold. I didn't watch a minute of it, but I heard it was just terrible.
Oh, dude, it's great. I mean, it's really worth watching because it's just, you can't believe that actually aired. I was telling John earlier, there are parts where, like, one of the guys would take a shot. I don't know, be like Chauncey Billups or Trae Young or whatever.
Trae Young.
The ball would just, like hover in the air because the feed was locked up, and then when it finally was, like, stopped being locked up, like, 3 seconds later the ball was on the ground, so you had no idea whether or not it went in. And the guy who he was playing can't see what the other guy's doing.
Chauncey Billups is like, did that go in? Do I have to make the shot?
Yeah. And what was the shot again? Okay, was it to the left side of the basket? And they had no imagination. It was like Trae Young came out, one of his first things was, let's do a left-handed free throw. I'm like, really? We're tuning in to watch guys do this?
Yeah.
But it was so bad, it was good. And Thursday might be something you might want to tune into. All right, real quick. I want to ask you about this report that Peter King had yesterday. He said a rival GM told him that the Patriots love Justin Herbert. Now, they would have to give up a lot to move up to get him, because I don't – we had Phil Perry on, who works for NBC Sports Boston earlier, and he said if he was to move into the teens, then maybe they wouldn't have to give up a first-round pick. There's no way he's falling to the teens. It just doesn't happen with these quarterbacks, especially a guy like him. For everything we've heard about Justin Herbert, he's probably going to get gobbled up within the first 10. So do you see Belichick giving up a first-round pick, next year's first-round pick, to go up and get Justin Herbert?
No, but I wouldn't be surprised if he gave up next year's first-round pick to go up and get a quarterback. I would guess, this is just my guess, that if Bill Belichick, what's today? Today is Tuesday, April 14th. If Bill Belichick is letting the world know on Monday, April 13th, 10 days before the draft, that he, quote-unquote, loves Justin Herbert, either through another GM who secretly somehow found out how Bill Belichick thinks, whatever the methods are. I'm not questioning Peter King's reporting. He's a great reporter and a great writer. But, like I'm just saying, the world knows that Bill Belichick loves Justin Herbert. Do you think that Bill Belichick really loves Justin Herbert? Or do you think that Bill Belichick probably likes Tua and Jordan Love more and really wants somebody to pick Justin Herbert so Tua or Jordan Love will fall down into the team and he can make a move up?
Option B, clearly.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
All right. Okay. Well, then let me ask you this. If you think that there's even a chance that Belichick would move up and get Tua, then why is his buddy Nick Saban going on TV and doing everything he can to praise this guy? Because wouldn't you think that because they're so close, he'd be like, dude, shut up. You know, throw something in there that throws the scent off of Tua so you don't have one of these teams like the Chargers or the Dolphins wanting to get him. Let him fall. Throw out something out there that's kind of like a nag. You know, it's like a negative comment that makes him go, maybe you'll end up getting some sort of value if they can trade up.
So Nick Saban's like, yeah, we thought about shutting him down for life.
Right. Yeah. You want to talk about a solid. That'd be a total solid to Belichick, but he's doing the opposite of that.
Yeah, I would guess that Bill Belichick has not. I would guess that Belichick has done his homework with Nick Saban in a way. Like, I bet that nobody knows, but I would guess that these two guys operate in a way on draft day, on the lead up to the draft, where Bill Belichick makes a call about all of his prospects, and Nick Saban openly talks to Bill Belichick about him, but Belichick doesn't want to give out a real full-blown hint about who he likes. I mean, like, I'm sure he's talked to him about Jedrick Wills. I'm sure he's talked to him about David McKinney, you know, all these guys. There's tons of them, right? I mean, like, I would guess that he is doing his full – Jerry Jeudy, you know, Henry Ruggs. I would guess he's doing his full due diligence, and that's where he gets the information on Tua. And the belief between those two guys is that there's no chance Tua will be available to the Patriots. However, 2020 is a weird-ass time, and because nobody can get a physical on this kid, all of a sudden there is the prospect that he could fall into the teens. Like, we did our mock, and the Raiders traded up to get him at 8 because he fell. I mean, there are going to be teams who, not because they don't like his game or whatever, but because they just can't, you know, get past the medicals, are just going to have him, like, they're going to have him off the board because of a failed medical situation. And would it be surprising at all if he fell to 10 and somebody made a move up to grab him? I don't think it would be that shocking. You know, conversely, I think, you know, Jordan Love is a guy that, you know, you can easily see the Patriots moving up to like 13 or 18 or whatever it is to grab, and maybe they don't have to use a first round pick next year.
I heard Burt Breer say yesterday that the amount of research that the Dolphins have done on Tua is like a private investigator. I mean, they have gone dug so deep on this guy. I mean, just think of all the players in this draft. Obviously, he's a huge mystery, and you're right. It's so weird with all the medicals and everything that has to do with the coronavirus and the lack of any kind of information regarding that. But just think of what you would have to do, and if you were the GM, every stone, like, there'd be no stone unturned on that guy. And it makes me wonder. If Bill Belichick traded next year's first-round pick to get to I have to admit, as a Patriots fan, dude, I'd be nervous as hell.
Yeah, but, like, all right, let me just on the Dolphins real quick. I don't know, have you guys read, have you read any of the Miami media stuff lately?
Yes.
Like the local press?
So, what do you mean? Regarding what?
All right, so, like Adam Beasley is a good friend of mine, and I'm not disparaging anything he's writing at all, but, like, he wrote, like, as of right now, the Dolphins quarter, like, this is what he wrote yesterday. You know, like, he's like, it seems like the Burrow probably not happening. It's like, yeah, no kidding. But it's like, then he wrote, you know, he had like, here's the list of quarterbacks in the order that the Dolphins prefer them as we understand it right now. 1, Burrow, 2, Herbert, 3, Jordan Love, 4, Tua. And like, you read Armando Salguero, and he's got this article, and it's like, Tua's undisputed, you know, he's like, it is undisputed and factually impossible to deny that Tua's injury history is as laid out by Forbes.com. It's like, what? Like, what? why are you citing Forbes.com for Tua's injury history? Like, why didn't you just go back and look at his injury history? Like, and so he did that. And they're like, it is so patently obvious what the, like, it's that the Dolphins are feeding this information to these guys and being like they're doing it for one of two reasons. One, which I think is less likely, is to make the fan base who's reading these articles get them where they're like, you know, we don't really want two of the medicals, you know, concern us if they don't draft him. Or two, which is the most obvious smokescreen in draft history, where they're trying to drive down to his price so they can just draft him at five instead of trading multiple first to go get him at two, which seems like the very, very obvious move to me by the Dolphins. And I just don't understand how 9 months ago, Tua was the top quarterback prospect and a borderline generational talent at the quarterback position. Like, half the NFL was going to be tanking for Tua. And now you're telling me that no one wants anything to do with him because he hurt his hip in college and they can't check out his medicals.
Yeah, I don't buy it either. Yeah.
Get out of here.
Yeah, he's going to get – I think there's the Miami's going to – I mean, they're going to do what they can to get him. Why not? And I just have a feeling that everyone's going to – all the quarterbacks that you're talking about, Herbert's going to be taken in the top 10. Dude, everyone wants a quarterback. It happens every year in the draft. I'm never shocked at people who end up taking these guys. Never. I'm never shocked at how high these quarterbacks go. Even the ones that you hear the day before how bad they are and how many questions they are, they always end up getting taken high.
Here's the other thing, too, that I wouldn't sleep on with Belichick is that, look, if any of these teams, like, if you start, like, the teams that want quarterbacks badly, Miami, right, they want to drive down the price of the quarterback. The teams that aren't planning on taking a quarterback would love to be, like, interested in a QB. Even a team like the Chargers, like, they probably love the, like, Tom Telesco probably loves the idea that everyone thinks he's taking Justin Herbert at six. Because then if somebody trades up to two or three to draft Herbert, like if the Dolphins do that, or I guess they would have to do it at five, but you get the point. Like if somebody trades up to four, two, three, or four to get Herbert, all of a sudden a better player falls to you at six. And I think that's what Belichick could be up to as well. Like he might think, okay, there are some really good defensive prospects or some great wide receiver prospects that could make our team better next year out of the gate. If we, you know, if we allow this idea that we want a quarterback to pervade the, you know, to pervade the public sentiment, all of a sudden, you know, we can have some really good talent drop to us. And I think that's probably more likely than him actually wanting to go up and get Justin Herbert.
All right, Will. So, listen, with only one episode left of Better Call Saul this season, I got a show for you as soon as that's all done. And you can, it's easy to binge watch because they're only 11 minutes long. It's a little show called Beef House on Adult Swim.
Oh, really?
Oh,
he's kidding.
No, dude, okay. It's great. Okay. It's great. It's Tim and Eric, and on the latest episode, it looks like a TGIF television show, like Full House. It's got the complete like audience laugh track and everything. And it's about a bunch of dudes that live together. In the last episode, Tim's got a hot date with a woman next door, wants him to go to his hot tub. Only problem is that he's been stopped up for 5 days and has a huge fear that he's going to have explosive diarrhea in her hot tub.
Well, that's a perfectly reasonable fear. By the way, have you watched Ozark Season 3 yet?
Dude, I can't get into Ozark. And it's not that I'm sure it's good. It's just one of those shows that every time I'm about to press play, I go, I don't know. I mean, if it's great, I'll take your word for it and I'll watch. Is it great from the get-go? Because I can't watch a show anymore that takes a season or two to get going. I don't have patience for that anymore.
It is great from the get-go. And I'm not comparing it to Breaking Bad because you wouldn't want to compare anything to Breaking Bad. But like meth in Breaking Bad is the plot fuel that just, you know, it's like jet engine fuel. Money laundering is the jet engine fuel for Ozark. Season 3 is freaking incredible. The other show, totally different, but I'm assuming you've watched Archer, right?
I've seen Archer. I haven't watched all of it, but I do like Archer. It's a good show.
Okay, well, it's a good cartoon. Yeah,
it's no Beef House, but you know,
Beef House is in the queue now.
Yeah, you can watch all of them in like 30 minutes. There's only like four of them right now, so there you go. You enjoy. All right, Will Brinson, thanks for coming on with us. Appreciate it. Thanks. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, see you guys.
All right, see you. All right, we'll be right back.
Toucher and Rich.
105 Sports Hub. It is Toucher and Rich. And in a time where all of these leagues are trying to figure out their contingency plans on how to get things started, I know that the NHL came out with something yesterday proposing that the league would start getting things rolling with the playoffs sometime around the end of summer, and what they would end up doing for the next season is starting in November, not give them any kind of breaks or all-star break or any kind of week off, and just roll right through it. What's that?
Bye week. No bye week, no all-star break. Yep.
Yeah, so they would basically just continue to have these guys smash their bodies with no kind of rest, which does not seem safe at all. You had players like Drew Doughty speaking out against that. And the longer this goes, the tougher it's going to be for them to get back and have any kind of postseason. But while all that's happening, and you've got Adam Silver trying to figure out whether there's going to be this Super Vegas experiment where all the teams go there and they have the playoffs, and then there's the Fargo, North Dakota, and Storyland, New Hampshire, other thing that they're thinking about with the NHL, and then the Grapefruit and the Cactus Leagues, the MLB. All I know is that somehow, some way, there has only been one sports organization, thanks to the rednecks in Florida, that are able to continue doing what they do, and that is the WWE, because the governor down there, who of course has already covered himself in glory throughout this coronavirus situation, Ron DeSantis, has deemed the WWE an essential business in Florida.
Unbelievable.
Allowing them to continue to do live television shows from its Orlando training facility because it's essential. According to the governor, he said that they are critical. It goes, quote, because the WWE is critical to Florida's economy. Now, remember, these are done in front of empty studios.
Yes.
How is that exactly essential to Florida's economy if it's nobody's not. Paying to go see them?
It's not. It's not essential.
No, it is not. All. And by the way, the people in the WWE are pissed because you have to understand, all these guys don't live in Florida. So that means they have to travel, whether it be by plane or even like, you know, a long car ride. They have to go out into the world and risk getting sick in order to go down and continue to do these, what is it, three shows a week now? I know they got Monday Night Raw. I think it's SmackDown on Fridays now. Oh, God, I'm going to get yelled at by Jay Stu and Sarge. And then there's, I think, Thursday. Don't they have like a Thursday night one too? So it's three live shows a week. And somehow Vince McMahon slipped enough money over to Ron DeSantis, I'm alleging, or I'm speculating, in order to get them to deem it an essential business. Which actually makes me wonder about, you know, some of the other, you know, gatherings and things. Like, if you're a concert, like, imagine if you're just like someone who wanted like a concert venue, how can you not open up? If that's is that essential to your business? Well,
Look at the employees, Rich, and that's the other big story, and you kind of touched on it. The wrestlers themselves are split on whether or not to do this. Not the people that have already traveled, that have to get on a plane or take a long car ride to Orlando to get there. The wrestlers that are there, that are taking part in these events, are split on whether or not to actually go out there because they're scared to get sick.
That is awesome. I mean, that is just the most Florida story ever. And by the way, this is like this week, somebody during their broadcast, they said it was a non-wrestler, a non-performer that was part of the broadcast recently, ended up having the coronavirus. And the only people I can think it would be is either one of the two announcers. I think it was two, or Rob Gronkowski.
Yeah.
So they didn't name who it was, but there's coronavirus going throughout the WWE now, yet they're continuing doing this as because it's good for the Florida economy, even though nobody's paying or going to any of these events. So God bless them. They figured out a way. And to that, Dana White's like, how do I do my fights in Florida? You're Dana White, don't you? Well, I guess you can't no matter what, because it was the mouse that ended up shooting him down.
Yeah.
And they obviously, you know, they don't want any of that. You know, Disney doesn't want to get any part of, you know, sending out the wrong message and getting criticized or anything like that. So I just thought that was the most Florida story of all Florida stories. Congrats. And by the way, Vince McMahon not having a good week as well, because not only did the XFL suspend operations, but they filed for bankruptcy and they owe a lot of people a lot of money. Did you see some of the filings, like the breakdowns?
I did. Tens of millions of dollars, and they're for sale. Vince is trying to offload it at this point.
Who would buy the XFL? I mean, it was a bad business model from day one. No. And you can't use the excuse that it was because of the coronavirus that they ended up shutting down. The league wasn't doing well anyway. The ratings are going down now. It didn't help. Obviously, it was bad, and it might have, sped up the eventual closing down of the XFL. But I think they only had one season in them anyway. If you don't have fans, if you don't have superstars or stars, even a star, then you're not going to have viewers, and the ratings proved that every single week.
Here's a question. Now we've seen two leagues fail spectacularly for one reason or another in the last 18 months. Will there ever be another football league to try and challenge the NFL?
I mean, I wouldn't think so. I mean, how much more of a test group do you need? You've had XFL twice. The AAF come in there. Am I saying that right?
It's the AAF. Yes.
And both of them failed. And not only they fail, they left the people who ran the companies in dire straits financially. So I don't know why anyone would do that. I don't know why anyone would try to start a league up. I like the fact. Listen, I'm glad it was there because the NFL got some ideas that they're going to implement next year from the XFL. It was kind of fun to watch, but I'm not going to watch all of it. Let's go to John on line two. What's up, John? You're in touch with Rich. Hey, he was asking if WWE is essential, then why is it Disney open? Because Disney is not run by morons.
Good point.
Because Disney does not want a public backlash that would destroy their peachy, super clean image of being, hey, we care about people. No, that would be the opposite of that. And if I was a wrestler, I'd be pissed too. All right, when we get back, we'll get to the stack. And in the stack, there's just so much. Zdeno Chara comes to defense of a much-aligned teammate. Wonder who that could be. We'll get to that in just a moment.
98.5, the Sports Hub. Toucher and Rich.
Now it's time to get to the stuff that we couldn't get to. It's the stack.
Hey, it's 98.5 Sports Hub and Toucher and Rich Show. All right. Stack, sponsored by Window Nation. It's Window Nation's buy two, get two free sale. No down payment, no payments, and 0% financing for 12 full months. Go to windownation.com. Chris Fowler, obviously you know him from your college football games. He has been speaking a lot lately, and this is something that I find really interesting and somewhat realistic. So he has been talking about for a while when the college football season is going to get started. As a matter of fact, there haven't been really any indications from anyone who runs the NCAA that there's any kind of contingency plan right now. I mean, you've heard almost all of these leagues talk about what they might do, or there's been, some sort of speculation by higher ups. You haven't heard a ton of that when it comes to college football. As a matter of fact, most people seem to think out of all the leagues, they're the one that just seems hell-bent on trying to start on time. Until now. Now you're starting to see just how realistic and how tough it's going to be to get the ball rolling and to have a season start on time, especially when you start in September. Now, Chris Fowler said that he has informed speculation from people who, I guess, are powerful and make these kind of decisions, that he has heard that one thing that is getting a lot of traction amongst the people in the NCAA is moving the college football season to this coming spring of 2021, with a season that would start the end of February. That's not a bad idea. I mean, obviously, if you happen to be an athlete that, I don't think that when it comes to college football, I don't know if there's a lot of two-sport athletes or whatever, but I do know that if you are going to realistically play, you do have guys. I mean, they're still obviously going to be in school, so you're going to have the same roster. On top of that, the weather does suck in February, but starts to get better in March. And, is really the end of February any better than, the end of, like a bowl game? If you're I just think that weather-wise it would make sense.
Unless you play and you go deep into the season, unless you play in the Southwest where it gets really hot come the early parts of May. And what does that do to the NFL draft?
You know what? I mean, that's another question. Who knows what happens to the NFL draft? But, I mean, if they truly want to save the season, that doesn't seem like the worst idea. Because
does it mean fewer bowl games, Rich? Because I'd be on board with that.
I mean, it is true. I mean, bowl games, you know, essentially mean nothing. So I don't know. I mean, that's a question that would have to be addressed when it comes to the draft. I don't really know. And I think that right now everything's kind of up in the air. And maybe if for some reason the NFL season gets moved back, maybe the draft gets moved back a little bit.
I'd be all in line with that. I mean, look, spring training, beginning of baseball season, and, you know, it would take up that period of time up until the NBA playoffs and the NHL playoffs where it's just like, can we please get the season over with so we can start the postseason? I mean, that kind of slot you're talking about would take up all that time, and college football fans would certainly tune in, but there are some other things to worry about at the end. I mean, how many bowl games are there? 36, 38, whatever it is. I guess all bowl games will be played in warm weather if you did it that way.
Yeah.
You know? As opposed to Yankee Stadium in mid-December.
Okay, and you know what the XFL was trying to do? They were trying to swoop in at the end of the NFL season and go, I know you guys like football, here's football. But it was players you didn't care about for teams that didn't exist before the XFL launched. You want to talk about really capitalizing on a quote-unquote thirst for football. You put the college football season immediately after the Super Bowl? Oh, my God. The ratings are going to be through the roof. And we all know that, you know, February and March sports, except for March Madness at the end of the month, can be a drag. You know, those are the dog days. Just get to the playoffs already when it comes to basketball and hockey. You want to talk about the perfect thing to plug in there that's going to get massive ratings. I think it's a pretty good plan, as long as you're right. You'd have to think, you know, knock out a couple things about the draft and all of that, but I mean, if that's your biggest issue, I guarantee you they would somehow find a way out of it. Because, you know, I mean, and the NFL might even feel comfortable moving it back because they don't want to draft guys until they see them play close to an entire season for the college year or play a bowl game. They want to see them in high-pressure situations. I don't know. Just seemed like a really interesting, and it kind of got me excited because that seems realistic. All of these things like the NBA and the NHL, that's like, well, we don't know if your people are going to be able to go back yet. I mean, there is realistic expectation that you might have a vaccine by February of next year. They said it could be a month to or a year to 18 months. You could possibly have one by then. And then that's truly when people are going to feel comfortable going en masse to go to a sporting event. I mean, they may have it to a lesser extent before that, but the confidence level is going to be off the charts once that vaccine is out there. And that would match up, hopefully.
The question is, when do they let fans back in to watch football? If you try and have a college football season, normally you can't have fans there.
Yeah, and think about it too, John. You're right about that because, you know, realistically, if you were to do the college football season as is right now, there's a very high chance that they'd have to do it without fans for at least half the season. Now, I mean, if that vaccine is out or if, you know, you've gotten to a point where, you know, hopefully a year from when this whole thing started, that the curve is so flat that it's almost gone, oh, man, you're going to be able to make all that money you would have lost. It's a great idea. It's a great idea for everyone, except for, of course, the whole draft thing. There might be a couple other things I'm just not thinking of right now. But that seems to be the most realistic of all the little things that have been thrown out there. So.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. The only problem is, and we'll go back into the problem that the AAF and the XFL ran into, is that after a 17-week NFL season and an extra round of playoffs and more playoff games, people are exhausted. When it comes to football, when you get to the middle of February.
Not college football. That's completely different. That is so. Do you know how thirsty people are going to be for sports, especially
in certain areas of the country? In certain areas of the country, yes. But I would say in an equal amount of areas of the country, I would think that football, people want to miss it a little bit, regardless of who's playing.
Dude, college football is nothing in New England. I mean, you think about compared to like that. And I would die to watch games. Everyone's going to be, they're going to be so hungry for actual real sports that matter, like college football. That hell yeah, it's going to be – see, I think that it's the best plan of all the plans I've heard so far. Just plan on it starting in February. Move your entire schedules now and make the spring amazing time for sports. This is going to be great.
It would be something. That's true.
Yeah. All right. It's James Gunn, he is the director of the Guardians of the Galaxy movies. Very controversially, he was let go and then he was brought back. He's also making the new Suicide Squad film. I think he's a very good director. He came out with yesterday there was somebody asking him, you know, telling him that most sequels suck, or at least the second movies in a group of films, they're the second sequel stink. And he goes, no siree. And he ended up naming a bunch of second movie sequels that are better than the originals. And I swear to God, this guy and I might have been separated at birth because he nailed some of them. First of all, off the top of your head, John Wallach and Dan O'Brien, a second sequel, like the second one in a series that is better than the first. Can you name one?
Rocky III?
No, the second one, like Rocky 2. Is that better than Rocky?
Well, you said the second sequel.
Oh, God, technical nerd guy. You have the glasses. I forgot. I meant the second
one. All right, John can be quiet. I'm just going to say The Empire Strikes Back.
Empire Strikes Back. Okay, that's a perfect example of one right there. Excellent example. He also puts on there Evil Dead 2, no question. The Dark Knight, that is the second one, no question, better than the one before it. The Road Warrior, I agree, better than Mad Max.
Very good movie.
He's very wrong about For a Few Dollars More. I believe The Good, Bad, and the Bad, the Ugly is the original. That's one of the greatest films ever made. X2, the second X-Men movie, definitely better than the first one. No question, Wrath of Khan might be the best number two in a series ever. Wrath of Khan is a legitimately excellent movie.
It is a good movie.
And the rest
of Star Trek. Kind
of, it was great. Dude, that leech they put in their ear, that gave me nightmares. Forever when I was a kid. Superman 2, I agree. Desperado, with no question. That's one of my all-time favorite action movies. It's El Mariachi was the first one. He put Blade Runner 2049. That was the one that just came out. I could not agree with him more. Have you seen the new Blade Runner that came out like 2 years ago?
I have not seen it.
Oh, my God. It is awesome. Like, that movie exceeded all expectations. And I thought the first one, dude, I fell asleep. I tried watching it like 3 times and I've fallen asleep each time. Not that it's a bad movie, it's just slow.
No, it's overrated. It's a little overrated, I agree.
Yeah, extremely. He also put, it's an inarguable fact that Alien and Aliens are equal. I have to agree with him on that, because one is a horror movie, one is an action movie. They're both excellent. I would add to this list Rambo First Blood Part 2, definitely better than First Blood.
Yep.
And Screwballs 2. far superior. So many unanswered questions and loose screws that I didn't know how they could top it. But Screwballs 2 came through. No question.
Meatballs 2. Meatballs 2 with the alien.
Was that 2 or 3?
That was 2. Okay. That was 2 with the alien. Yeah.
With Meathead. His name was Ted.
Yes.
And they called him Meathead.
That's right. Yep.
Yeah. That was not a good sequel at all. Although it was better than Meatballs 3 with Corey Feldman.
Oh, Jesus.
Which I believe. Yeah, I believe there really is a Meatballs with Corey Feldman that was in it.
Oh, God.
Which is fantastic. I couldn't think of any more. Hot Shots Part Deux, the second Hot Shots movie.
That's,
you remember any of those?
Yeah.
Deuce Bigelow, European Gigolo.
Attaboy.
I'm one of the rare people who actually found that to be a funny movie. I had no problem with that. Eddie Griffin was actually pretty good.
Come on.
I got no problem with Deuce Bigelow, European Gigolo. Oh, it had the boat that had hydraulics on it, and they bounced in the water.
Jesus.
Not a bad movie.
Okay.
Toy Story 2 is better, too. That was pretty good. Oh, all Bad right. Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans. That is a good one. Werner Herzog directed that. All right.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.